Screaming Skullboy from White Cotton Panties, one of the many creations of Jason Squamata, who I am here tonight with. Jason Squamata is the head writer for Hypno Comics. So Jason, what is Hypno Comics?
Yikes! Well, Hypno Comics. In its most specific physical real sense, it's a line of comic books, or serialized graphic novels, if you will, that I have conceived and scripted, and I collaborate on each of these, so far four books, but we have more planned. There are four books that I collaborate on with three brilliant artists, and they're due to be printed in September, and so Hypno Comics is this line of comic books: Other Men and the Oraculoids, Hypnozine, American Zero, and Teenage Lovecraft, each with a vibe, a flavor, and a frenzy all its own, but in its most abstract spiritual sense, if you will. Hypno Comics is a way of seeing.
A way of seeing? What exactly do you mean by that?
A filter through which to discern the chaos of our times, like in a magic eye painting, where you might, through the hypno filter, some of the maddening, confusing, puzzling, harrowing, terrible things in the world outside our windows suddenly click into sharper focus as filigreed elements in a grander and more lovely design than a pre-hypno world could ever conceive of.
So I looked at your website today, and through what I can get from the website, at least, it seems that Hypno Comics seems to have multiple facets of a dystopia world and sort of heroes that aren't what we as, well, what the general public considers heroes that are, well, not really heroes. Let's call it non-heroes.
Yeah, that sounds accurate in from a certain perspective. I feel like dystopian fiction, at least, you know, the classics, the acknowledged classics of the genre, or the dystopian stories that I'm aware of, generally have a kind of morally instructive tone to them.
A morally instructive tone? Could you explain what you mean by that, at least? How does Hypno Comics differ?
Like, almost by what they exclude, they suggest a utopia. So they're saying that paradise is made up of the elements that are excluded from the culture that this story is happening in. And so 1984, which is this beautiful, dark, turgid, nightmarish, romantic piece of, like, political pornography, you know, it has, it's has an agenda, you know. And yet, I feel like that's maybe a loftier and more advanced version of the dystopian genre, because it doesn't suggest that there are any escape routes. So, in that sense, I guess, I think the world is filled with nasty and beautiful things, and you kind of have to, I like to see what's beautiful about all of it, and I like the nobility of my characters, who are noble, to stand out in sharper relief when played against characters who embody the most intense darkness I can imagine, and yet who have their own point to make and their own kind of sexy. I want everyone to come to the party, even the evil people. And I feel like on the other side of midnight, when everyone is melting into one thing, all those labels like good and evil, hero, villain, you know, all masks are cast aside in the great melting into hypnocracy.
So, within the issues of Hypno Comics, you are attempting to write these stories without the filter of a moral code or agenda or the use of stereotypes or...
To move beyond stereotypes, we definitely employ archetypes. And I feel like there are these kind of like mythic dramas being played out in these stories. I mean, with Other Man and the Oraculoids, it's, you know, these surrealist sorcerers with kind of this more magical view of life versus these Nazi Ubermenschen, who are these super scientists. And it's basically two different relationships to the dream world, where the surrealist wants all all dreams to be worlds, and for reality to melt into this boundless expanse of multiversal possibilities. Whereas the Nazi has one dream, wants everyone, he doesn't want to, interact with anyone who is not party to his dream, and he wants to subjugate all, the endless possibilities of dream life to this iron fantasy of absolute control. So you can't get more archetypal or diametrically opposed than that. And yet it's the filigree you bring to these things, by making the Nazi characters in that case as finely drawn and as complex and in their own way as attractive as the, more overtly heroic surrealist characters who also have their perversions and fetishes.
So you're trying to write characters into these stories, and I guess trying to write these stories as more of a reflection of sorts of real life?
It's more like real life, not in the sense of reducing something mythic to something, ordinary, but in the sense that it reminds us that in this filigreed complex world, all of us contain every kind of hell and heaven and are capable of inflicting it on others. I think, stories with, a clear moral line, this is the good guy, this is the bad guy, they're dishonest, and I think they can only teach us so much about life.
So why did you choose comics as a format to explore these concepts, to tell these stories instead of, a novel or poetry or anything else?
Yeah. I've always loved comics since I was just a little thing. I love them. Them picture books, or Incredible Hulk or Twinkie the Kid or whatnot can fight robbers and have adventures. I was basically reading comics instead of living for most of my childhood. But in terms of having abandoned them for a while and then, I fell back into them like a lot of people do, in terms of reading them, in terms of all the stuff I've learned about life and myself and reality or the lack thereof, why talk about those things in a comics form? It really comes back to them pictures.
Why does it keep coming back to those pictures?
Because I feel like they're complex ideas that that no matter how riveting or how life warping or exciting they might be, someone talking about them, like this. It's still just someone talking about something. And, and if we couch this in, sound effects and bits of music and stuff, it gives it this veneer of beauty. So you get this shrink-wrapped protein coating around my blah, blah, blah. So the ideas are presented, but there's this, a person can be seduced by the beauty of the sounds, of the packaging. In the case of comics, here's this art, here are these characters, these finely rendered characters in this strange, panel to panel, secret language of storytelling. And I feel like I know that my view of the world around me and in some cases of consciousness, of all the things I've read and seen, have been most powerfully affected by certain comic books.
So all the individual issues, all the individual stories tackle your concept, your view of reality. Could you perhaps give a synopsis of the individual stories, the four different books?
Right. Hypnozine is this sci-fi love story where someone in a kind of future dream city called Cacadelphia, we ask you to imagine every city you've ever lived in all folded into one space. And in this kind of meta macro city, there's this kid, Dimitri Quinn, and he's been programmed to be an assassin. And he just doesn't want to kill, and so he gets beyond his programming, but suddenly has no reason to live. So he's a psycho-programmed killer loose in a city, falling in love with everyone he sees, and then his old programmers come after him in the midst of this bizarre kind of subculture that's evolving, where all this brainwashing technology is now on the streets. Kids are recreationally brainwashing themselves and assuming cover identities and assuming all the tools of espionage just in their nightly games and in their predatory love hunting of each other. And so in this tapestry of madness, he's trying to find meaning, self, and to save the soul of a particular hypno kid, a girl named Kylie Butler. So Hypnozine is a psychedelic noir love story, if you will. That's what I'd call it in an elevator. But American Zero, on the other hand, while it does partake of the same ethos, and all these books kind of ever so delicately weave into each other, by the way, but that shouldn't, there's no continuity as such. It shouldn't, you know, scare people away. American Zero is, on the surface, something much more superficial, where we have the James Bond super spy archetype flattened into this 2D monster, where in the art we're trying to sustain the feeling of one of those mad James Bond credit sequences, where just all the murderous, nightmarish shades of violence expressed in the story are turned into decorative motifs and this careening, you know, like eye-raping feast of propaganda. In these stories, Adam Zero is another psychoprogrammed super killer, but he has embraced it. He hasn't fought it like Dimitri Quinn, so his soul has been, you know, like shattered into a million synthetic memories that get reshuffled depending on who he has to be to kill whoever he has to kill. But he has volition. He's basically like the ultimate right winger's idea of what a superhero should be. He's gonna like beat up the hippies, and he's gonna, you know, like just, you know, set fire to every city in America if he has to bring or, you know, if that's what he has to do to bring order to the people. So giving those people their ultimate superhero, but you know, you cannot. It's obvious within three pages of Adam Zero number one that this character is completely psychotic. So it's making a cartoon out of the far right, and exposing him, and it's, yeah, I think it's scary how much fun that one is to read, because it's just pure wall-to-wall hate for all living things.
And Other Men and the Oraculoids is surrealists versus Nazis, and well, what about H.P. Lovecraft?
Well, Teenage Lovecraft is on the surface weird little kid comes to a, you know, beachside town where, you know, just all the people are playing volleyball and having fun, and he wants to fit in because bad spooky things happened back in Arkham where he comes from. So this little kid, whose name happens to be Howie Lovecraft, and his sidekick Augie, they're trying to figure out how to be popular. Well, he gets sand kicked in his face, and all of a sudden getting revenge becomes much more important than popularity. And little Howie, who ends up being, once his blood gets up, he's a mean, vicious, cruel little creature. He happens to find a magic book called the Hecronomicon at the local library, and it's just incantations that basically they will turn any 98-pound pasty syphilitic weakling into the big Shuggoth, the hero of the beach. And so it's really, Teenage Lovecraft is a love story too. Like all teenage stories are love stories. Those teenagers always fallen in love.
And fallen out of love.
And fallen out of love. Yeah.
So in your view, what is comics today? Where do you see comics going?
It's a death trap, Jeffrey. It's a suicide rap. We gotta get out while we're young. No, really. I would not wish the desire to create comics on my worst enemy in this day and age. Sadly, I am possessed by this compulsion that will surely be the end of me. But still, I am compelled again and again to make more comics. Comics which, will they exist? They'll exist tomorrow. They'll be more expensive tomorrow, and dumber, and more of them will have X-Men in them. But will they be here the day after tomorrow? Probably not. So why? Why comics? Why, Jeffrey? Because comics are beautiful. Because they do things that no other form can do. Because they are untouched by the corporate committee thinking. Well, which is not to say that, well, corporates don't, you know, corporations have exude sweat comics that, you know, they can spin into movies and toothbrushes and whatever. But in terms of the pure form itself, it's capable of things. It's magic in the brain. There are any number of beautiful texts like the Scott McCloud books or the works of Alan Moore, Grant Morrison, Harvey Pekar, blah, blah, blah. There are so many books out there that are testaments to the storytelling and aesthetic and mind-altering possibilities of this form that, you know, the Hey Kids, comics are for everybody, you know, like storyline that occasionally like erupts, you know, on USA Today or wherever the hell. It's, we're so beyond that. Comics are out there, they're beautiful. I don't know what's going to happen to them as an industry, but I think...
You seem to be talking about comics that are self-published and by lesser-known authors and illustrators. What about mainstream comics?
Like DC and Marvel and companies like that, no disrespect to them, they've sponsored some amazing stories over the decades and they have some beautiful mythologies. But I don't know, I get an increasing sense of desperation from those major companies and they're just trying everything except just handing the keys to the most gifted creators and just letting them do whatever they want. And so I feel like in the same way that the whole system, you know, wobbled a few years ago and all the dinosaurs and corporate monsters who rule this planet like malevolent egregores were suddenly wobbling and hungry and confused and they had eaten the very, you know, palm fronds and lily pads that they were suspended on and about to sink into the muck of their own iniquity. And there was this beautiful moment of weakness where everything could have been different. And sadly, everything scabbed over. They were rewarded for their iniquities. Everything has kind of gone back into this grind of normality on an economic and a political level. And this like great window has closed. But I feel like in the same way that comics in so many ways, especially with the big companies and the universes that they create and populate, they mirror the things that are happening under the surface in the real world in all these beautiful ways. So I think the desperation and the oncoming doom of these major companies that are just trying to maintain copyrights and don't give a fuck about stories may allow for a renaissance in the cracks of their ruins.
And if this crumble does happen and the renaissance for comics does come, well, what then?
Everyone should be making comics all the time because you can tell a visual story. You can, you know, make that 500 million blockbuster movie in your mind on paper and it's done and no one can take it away from you and 100 people in suits don't have to vote on whether you can tell that story or not. And there's something beautiful about that.
So Hypnozine.
Yeah.
You wanted to be able to break through that mirror to let people who are in this world or to those who are not in this world, who don't read comics, you want Hypnozine to be for the Hey Kid, for everyone?
Well, yeah, in a sense, you know, Hypnozine is a special case because technically it's not a comic. You know, I mean, we're presenting all these books as comics, but, you know, with the weird spelling and stuff, we suggest that it's another kind of comic. So, Other Man and the Oraculoids, Teenage Lovecraft, those are both comic-y comics with frames and bubbles and, you know, that we can recognize the tropes, you know, in very different ways with those books. But to some extent, American Zero, but definitely with Hypnozine, it's texts embedded in these, you know, somewhat abstract but still figurative and kind of like mind-altering, you know, sort of images. And we provide like this whole kit. There's a soundscape with the Hypnozine And, you know, we suggest at some future date there will be like a chemical that you can ingest sacramentally to kind of augment the effects of the hypnozine. So we encourage you to put headphones on, listen to the spoken word soundscape, which is reading the text to you while you meditate in the images. You have this experience, you know, where you're like, it's sensory deprivation, like every sensory modality is being played upon by the energies of hypnozine. So, you know, is that a comic book? I don't know, but I feel like, you know, even though there isn't that frame-to-frame interplay and the bubbles and the things that comics do, I would like to popularize just the more on every level. You know, I mean, everything has a multi-platform, you know, body now. You know, the book becomes a movie, becomes, you know, release the soundtrack, the underoos, blah blah blah. But for this whole experience to be provided by all the different media, and for a book where words and pictures play parts of equal significance as intermeshed as a comic book or, you know, in as an illustrated book like Hypnozine. I like all that stuff.
Well, why don't we listen to one of those soundscapes right now?
Oh, why don't we? This is one of my favorites.
Despite the existential exhaustion that creeps in amidst the diaphanous downloads and the caustic cascade of high-res synthetic memories, despite the blur that comes when you can't remember which world you should wake up in, despite the collateral ego damage that afflicts this jeweled web, she plays like a trick, like a harp, like a game. She lives for this. And there are so many kindlies she has and hasn't been. Each more hypno than the last.
Alright, well, if anyone wants to find out any information on any of these, on any of the issues on Hypnocomics, where can they go to find out?
Okay, well, absolutely. Go to hypnocomics.com. That's HYPNOKOMIX.com. It's spelled that way because these books are from a parallel universe. The K and the X are so you'll know they're from another place. But you can go there. So hypnocomics.com. You can check out the blog. Well, there's always late-breaking blogification on hypno subjects at hypnocomics.blogspot.com. So Google our blog all you want. You can Google it all day long if you want to, and no one will be the wiser. You can like our Hypnocomics Facebook page. You can jump into our Hypnocomics Twitter feed, okay, if you are so inclined. And I'm trying to tweet more often than I have. So, you know, and I like to leave juicy tweets in my wake. So, you know, hopefully there'll be tweets for everybody. And where else? Oh, and by all means, we're in the middle of a frantic telethon to raise printing money for these juicy mad little stories. So if anything you people out there have heard tonight sounds at all interesting to you, you can have a hand in making this happen, and you'll be rewarded a millionfold, not just in the hypnoverse, but in this physical world that we sadly inhabit. So, like, get in there. Hypnocomics at Kickstarter.com. But all these things are jungled up together. You open any one of these doors, it is going to lead you everywhere else. And that's what our stories are about. That's what I'm about as a person. I know that's what you're about, Jeffrey.
Opening doors, leading people places,
Well, yeah.
confusing them.
Yeah, confusing them a little bit,
a
but
little.
disorientation leads to suggestibility. And that's something we should never forget.
All right, just juicy, Jason, just juicy. Well, again, this is Jeffrey Aldrich at KBOO Portland 90.7. You've just been listening to a short interview with Jason Zagumata, a local author.
Yeah,
All right.
it's been a pleasure, Jeffrey. It's a
It's been a
pleasure to be here
pleasure.
in Portland. It's fantastic and like this. And thank you for listening, all you K-boo-boos and K-boo-boo kitties. And y'all just jump in there. I'll see you on the other side.
All right.
Peace out.